Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 146 of D&D Discussions, the podcast for players and DMs alike, where we cover a wide variety of topics to help you with your games. I'm your host, Ryan Reeder, and with me, as always, is my good buddy, Ben Bumhoffer. How are you doing tonight, Ben?
I am fighting for my life to not be busy and find some free time to do stuff.
It is November and December, which are historically the two busiest months of the year for practically everyone.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you work in the healthcare industry in any form that deals with insurance, this is a very busy time of year.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Very busy time. But thankfully, we are not so busy that we cannot sneak away for a little bit of time to record a new episode.
We're not so busy yet.
Not so busy yet.
Just want to toss that out there. Not so busy yet.
It's coming. It's coming soon. It's coming soon. I think we have probably two more episodes.
Yeah.
For
this year specifically, I'm saying probably two more.
Yeah, probably two more. But it's exciting because that means not this episode, not next episode, but the episode after that is our Christmas one shot.
I already have
one of my favorite episodes of the year.
Idea for our theme, and it's so stupid that I think you're gonna enjoy it.
Yeah, I'm very, very excited. It's one of my favorite shows every year.
I mean,
for sure,
it's gonna be real dumb this year, like real dumb,
in the best way.
Yeah,
in the best way,
of course. No, it's one of those. We take a thing and then we build off of it to make it just really cool and fun. But the starting point is real dumb. So I'm excited for this. This is going to be great.
I'm very excited. Yes. But for today, we've got a little bit of news. We've got a listener question that we're going to go over and some really cool stuff to shout out. So let's jump in and get started. We have a brand new Designer Insights from Unearthed Arcana subclasses update, and the survey for it is open. Honestly, Ben, I've really been loving this new format
of
Designer Insights when they do Unearthed Arcana. They don't just drop them. They drop them and then do a kind of a blog-like thing from the designers that just kind of go through like their reasoning and their ideas and whatnot for whatever the Unearthed Arcana is. And I've got to say that type of format is really much more helpful and much more interesting and much more insightful than the old format of just dropping the stuff and then maybe having a little video going over survey results.
Yeah. And on top of that too, it's giving people a chance to kind of play test the changes as well. Because when we went through like the 2024 rule set, there were a couple iterations on some of the things, but with these on a lot of these subclasses that they're dropping in, they're dropping them, giving everybody a chance to try it out. Then they go through, different iterations at this point. And the designers go through their insights based off of feedback from what they're getting, redesign it, and then put it back out there to say, hey, here are the changes. These are why. Try it out now. Let us know what you think. And I think that it is, it's adding a lot of visibility and just transparency to the process as well as their thoughts behind the actual, design, which I think is a very welcome addition. I'm actually very happy about that. And on top of that too, I think that it helps to show that they are listening to feedback in a way that, might not have been as visible before. I mean, granted, from previous videos and things, they have talked about, feedback that they've gotten or, how they've kind of gone through that. But this is actually showing direct change before the product launches. And I think that that is an amazing way for them to, kind of help rebuild some of that trust that has been lost over the past couple of years.
Yeah, 100%. So this particular one is a collection of five iconic subclasses. So ones that exist already that they are updating with new design. So the five that they are going back and reworking some, Path of the Spiritual Guardian, Path of the Storm Herald, Barbarian, the Cavalier Fighter, Warrior of Intoxication Monk, and Oathbreaker Paladin. So some of the names have changed a little bit as well, but we'll jump in real fast. So Path of the Spiritual Guardian Barbarian, this was formerly Path of the Ancestral Guardian. They wanted to broaden the kinds of spirits that could aid the barbarian. You can still be your ancestors, but now can include spirits of animals, spirits of nature, etc. So the spiritual protectors, formerly ancestral protectors, has been broken up into multiple effects that can be chosen when the barbarian hits with a weapon or unarmed strike. And the feature now scales with the number of attacks the barbarian can make, letting them replicate the 2014 effect with two attacks on the same target or choosing a different combination as the situation calls for it. So that's pretty cool. And then also Vengeful Spirits, formerly Vengeful Ancestors, continues the design emphasis, rewarding multiple attacks, letting the barbarian make additional attacks when they roll an 18 to 20 on the D20 on an attack roll. That's pretty cool. And then the features will play well with two-weapon fighting, reckless attack, and feats like Sentinel that let you make attacks as reactions more consistently. So just bonus attacks, that's kind of cool, especially once you get higher up into to the later levels. So Ben, what do you think?
You know what? I think, you know, looking at it from a roleplay aspect, I love it a lot more. Just because, you know, it does give that spirituality to the barbarian on top of, you know, having the ancestry available as well. I think it's kind of a cool way to kind of flavor it. So that's, you know, you're able to play around with it and do more than you can, you know, by strictly limiting you to your ancestors did this, you know, then, you know, maybe come up with a backstory for each ancestor. Well, now you have like spirits of the world to kind of, you know, play with. I think it's a really cool idea. On top of that, too, I love the vengeful spirits. I think that's actually an amazing feature. And for a barbarian, I think it totally makes sense of adding just more and more attacks as they level up and, you know, become more, you know, in tune with that spiritual path that they're on.
Yeah. And it feels good. That's mm-hmm. definitely a really feel good trait.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
The Path of the Storm Herald, though, I'm actually really excited about that. I played one for all of like two or three sessions before the group broke up. And I'm happy to see that coming back. But the fact that the Storm Aura has actually been redesigned to actually scale with the rage damage bonus is great. Originally they had for, if you chose the Desert or the Tundra, it used a flat number as opposed to now it uses D4s for, you know, basically if your rage bonus is like two, that means you get to throw in two D4s of damage on top of that. It doesn't do that for the C bonus because the C bonus is D6s, but that's because it only deals or affects like a secondary target because like lightning jumps from them, whereas the desert and the tundra are auras. So it can be, you know, a bunch of enemies kind of around you as opposed to just that one extra one, which I think is pretty good design in that sense. Plus for if you choose, you know, tundra, it's been completely redesigned so that instead of applying temporary hit points, it actually reduces damage that a creature can deal, which I think is actually pretty cool.
Yeah. There's not a whole lot of those type of effects. So that is actually really neat.
Exactly. And, then, you know, for Raging Storm, that's all been designed with, depending on what, effect you choose. Damage now causes creatures to start burning, which makes sense. C causes a bolt of lightning to leap off the first target to another one. Tundra deals cold damage and halves the creature's speed in addition to damage reduction, which, you know, totally works for slow or for cold. Makes sense. You know, the only thing that I can always think of is like, should cold make things slower? Yes. We saw it happen with the T-1000. The end. That's how that works.
Yeah, no, I like that a lot. I like a lot of the old subclasses definitely had the scaling issues, the 2014 stuff. So it's really good to see them come back and scale stuff better in the 2024 editions of things. So I like that sort of design a lot. And then thinking about that and rolling more dice is always fun.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Versus just flat numbers. The Cavalier Fighter has a few small changes. Unwavering Mark no longer has limited uses. Ferocious Charger has been redesigned. It now gives the fighter and its mount extra speed. And moving doesn't provoke opportunity attacks, which is always very nice and makes a lot of sense, right, for a Cavalier. In addition, during the movement, you can give a creature the prone condition just by moving next to them. Kind of, I like to think of that, you know, the horse rearing up and people falling over, you know, not to get hit or mm-hmm. whatever. So,
or even just bumping into them.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So definitely a few, you know, minor quality of life tweaks.
The Way of Intoxication Monk. Again, I have also played the Way of the Drunken Master Monk before, which is they changed the name to, you know, fit it in with the rest of the Way of, you know, subclasses that the monk has. This actually is amazing that they kept a lot of the whole idea of like being fluid and elusive and being able to kind of move through and around things, giving it extra movement as well as being able to redirect attacks, which is really cool. Which, again, if you've ever seen Legend of Drunken Master, amazing movie, fun to watch because of just Jackie Chan's fluidity as a drunken master as he's going through and fighting. So, you know, you have that to play around with. But in this Unearthed Arcana, there's actually a new ability to create magical brews that the monk can drink to get like just various benefits, which are actually pretty nifty. Like you can exhale toxic flames that also leave like a poison effect. You have resistance to like psychic or radiant damage. And then also you can do the refreshing dip, which is whenever you regain hit points, you regain additional hit points equal to a roll of your martial arts die. So again, just on top of everything. And you can enhance that at later levels. You get new brews at later levels, like Drunkard's Luck, which gives you heroic inspiration if you don't already have it. So, yeah, there you go. Give yourself a luck point, essentially.
Yeah,
pretty cool stuff that they've kind of added to the flavor of it and everything. I'm pretty happy about that.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of the name.
Yeah. No, I'm kind of with you on that. Maybe
I don't like that. I'm not a huge fan of like warrior of for mm-hmm. a monk in general.
Yeah, because I don't think warrior.
It's confusing. Like when, especially like when you have a fighter and a barbarian class, that it's just a kind of a confusing name. But and let's be honest, Drunken Master is the perfect name. Why would you change that? It back.
Like barbarian makes more sense to be warrior of, with the monk being path of.
Yeah.
Just our thoughts.
Yeah. But all the changes sound cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. The changes sound cool. The name is dumb. I don't like the name. When you have drunken master, like, going just Warrior of Intoxication seems like a massive downgrade.
Warrior of Drunkenness. Warrior of the Drink.
They're going to have to workshop it.
Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah. And finally, the Oathbreaker Paladin. Like before, the Oathbreaker replaces the Paladin's original subclass. But you can actually take it at level 3 now without replacing another subclass, which is cool. Cause you just might be your story and it might just work for an Oathbreaker. A lot of the Oathbreaker features have been adjusted or redesigned. Conjure Undead replaces Control Undead. So it allows the Paladin to, you know, summon an undead creature. Dreadful Aspect now goes through Divine Smite. Aura of Hate enhances Aura of Protection and clarifies only undead and fiends that are allies benefit from it. And then finally, Dreadlord is a bonus action now that imbues the Paladin's Aura of Protection with each benefit broken up for readability. And similar features, Dreadlord can be recharged by expending a level 5 spell slot as well. So just again, a lot of 2024 really is just enhancement and quality of life.
Yes.
Like that's really all you're getting. If someone were just playing 2014, and didn't want to spend a bunch of money to get the new materials, they're just fine continuing to play with what they've got.
Yeah.
If there was someone coming in new, I would definitely recommend the 2024 edition, because I think it does have a lot of quality of life stuff. It's got a lot of streamlining. There's a lot more, we've talked about before, bonus action reaction type things that you can do. And I think it just is a little more fun and plays better, and there's more stuff for the player to do on a turn. So I would recommend that. But again, this is just for us who are playing 2024 now or converted over. These types of things bring just nice quality of life to familiar subclasses, especially ones that your players might be playing right now, that gives them the ability to, you know, enhance or upgrade to that if they so choose. Mm-hmm. So all good stuff. Obviously, all what we went over is not the entire thing. We'll have the link in the show notes on theindiscussions.com. You can go download the Unearthed Arcana and read through all the changes that have happened. This was just kind of a high-level overview, but go check it out. And the survey is open if you want to leave feedback.
Yeah. Not in our show notes. I'm just jumping in really quick because it's just something I wanted to bring up. So the Forgotten Realms books are now out. I received mine in the mail, which is great. Something that I
did literally a day or two after we recorded, like we should have looked at the early access date right before we started, because it was literally like the next day or day after I got the email that's like, you got your early digital access. And I was like, well, we missed that one.
Well, we did say it's coming soon in that episode, and it was very soon. But no, one thing I wanted to say on the physical books, specifically, I love the fact that they added on the very bottom for the Heroes of Faerun, player expansion. And then for the Adventures in Faerun, Dungeon Master expansion, kind of, helping people again, who are, you know, potentially new to, you know, expansion type stuff, on what would be more, you know, beneficial for them. So, you know, the Heroes has like the subclasses and, you know, all that, you know, extra jazz and cool stuff. You know, it's focused more towards the players, whereas the Adventures one is, you know, more about the setting, you know, different quests, things like that. And it's focused as Dungeon Master expansion. I just think that is a cool new touch that they're adding to it. And I hope they continue, because again, I think it's just very helpful going forward.
Oh yeah. Being able to see that right away, especially if you're in like a bookstore or something and looking at it physically. Mm-hmm. Right. And I will say, I was actually at our friendly local game shop this evening. And my goodness, the alt covers for these two books are freaking gorgeous. Like, it almost makes me wish I was collecting all the alt covers.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
They are really good. So if you like, you know, displaying your books or having, you know, the copy, or you're a collector and doing the alt covers, those two alt covers are just beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lots of really great artwork is going into all of these, of course, but I mean, just that cover art is great. And the fact that it links together too is just beautiful.
Very cool. Yeah. Very, very cool. All right. So switching gears a little bit, let's talk about a listener question that came in the last week or so. The question reads, hey guys, when I'm running combat in person and using maps and minis, I found there's an element to it that I struggle with. I find something jarring about having to get up from my laptop where I'm running the D&D Beyond encounter, then walk around the table to move my NPCs on the map, then return back to the laptop to use the NPC's abilities, log HP changes, etc. I know this sounds simple, but that much activity makes it harder for me to get back to my laptop and fully execute my turns in a smooth way. All the commotion will sometimes cause me to forget certain NPC abilities as well, or the fact that they have legendary actions or whatever. I suspect this is kind of a thing I could get better at with more time and practice, but are there any tips or tricks you guys would have to make this easier for me in the meantime? And this is a great question, Ben.
Oh, definitely.
In fact, I mean, we could probably even expound on it, just like as running, you know, anything in person combat wise, there is a lot going on. So what do you do for these types of situations to help keep you focused and keep things on track?
Yeah. Well, first and foremost, the easiest thing is have your players move your minis, you know, just tell them where you need it to go or whatever. Done. You don't need to get up. You don't need to worry about, you know, changing your perspective too much from that. Hands down, probably the easiest thing you can do. But this leads into so much more, like Ryan, you were saying, because there's a lot going on as a DM, especially once you start getting into, you know, more difficult encounters. There's layer actions you need to worry about. There's legendary actions. There's legendary resistances, HP, NPC abilities, things like that. And a lot of it kind of comes down to, like, honestly, organization. And you know, I'm not knocking yours. Mine's horrible. But there's a couple things that, you know, I've learned to kind of do to help things along. Like, when I DM in person, I use my iPad for, you know, encounters, for, you know, stat blocks and things like that, because, you know, that's where all the information is. I don't need anything else with me. You know, I swap between screens and stuff, but that's not always the easiest, best thing to do, especially when it comes to, like, you know, tracking legendary actions. Something you can do is have something more physical to kind of have in front of you so that you don't forget that it's there, whether it's writing down the legendary action on, like, a token or just a scrap of paper or something like that. Have it in a spot that is for, like, this round of combat. And then it's like, okay, hey, I still have these three legendary actions that I can use if I want to. It comes to a point where you want to use one, take that piece of paper that has the name of that legendary action on it, or, you know, its description or what it does or whatever. And then you set it aside to the used section, like, you know, kind of in front of you, so that, you know, you've used that. It's not available. You still have two that you can use. And it's like just a visual cue right there. I still have those to play around with. Of course, the downside is you just have to remember to refresh it every time your monster's turn comes up. But, you know, it's like kind of, if you've ever done, like, or played Magic or another, you know, CCG or something like that, get into the habit of doing your reset movements and then starting your full turn. That's specifically for like legendary actions. That's one thing that I can recommend that I need to do when I DM in person, or I need to at least start doing, because it's something that I haven't done yet. But I think that'd be very helpful for that. Aside from that, you know, have tokens for, like, legendary resistance so that, you know, if you've spent that, and different things like that. I think that those are just, you know, small things that you can have to have a visual representation that you can just take a quick glance at, and then, you know, boom, it's in your head. You're not going to lose track of it easily.
Yeah. All very good tips. Very good tips. So for me, I do a lot of in-person running. One of the things I tend to do is I tend to stand.
Yeah, I definitely do that too.
whenever combat happens, I just tend to stand. I don't know why. Maybe it's just like a nervous habit, or just like it's things are more intense, or it just gives me a better overview. Depending on placement, sometimes I have the board close enough that when I'm standing, I can reach over the screen and, you know, move things without moving physically to go over to the side. Sometimes I can't. So in those instances, it's good to ask the players, hey, can you move this guy next to this, or move him 30 feet up or 40 feet up or something like that. That's an easy thing you can take off you. Another really easy thing you can take off you. I actually have a special board I got from Etsy to do this, but it's very easy to make your own if you want. Have players keep track of their conditions themselves.
Mm, yes.
So the board I have, it was just like a little $20 or $25 Etsy board. It came with like six slots with little dry erase things. So you can write the player name so that you can put them in order. the order that the players are going, which is nice. And then it's got a bunch of these tiny little 3D printed cubes that are all different colors. And like 10, 15, 20 different little square slots that are all different conditions, you know, paralyzed, poison, prone, concentrating, all those types of things. And whenever a player is one of those things, they keep track by putting a cube of their color inside the spot. And that way it's really easy to keep track of. And I don't have to do the tracking of all the conditions because I've already got enough going on. So I highly recommend doing something like that. That's something that you can give your players to do to take a little bit of the load off you. There's also tons of places you can 3D print them. If you have a 3D printer, they're on Etsy, they're on Amazon. You can get basically these little rings with status rings. Conditions or buffs. And those are great too, because if you're playing with minis, I highly recommend grabbing a set of those, because then you just take the ring, toss it on the mini, and then it's very easy to see what the mini has. Mm-hmm. If it's like a bless buff, right? Or raging or concentration, like hex, hunter's mark, all these different things. It makes it really easy to track that without having to remember, is that guy hunter's marked? I don't remember if I did it. Or you're concentrating on this. You got hit. You need to make a con save to try and hold your concentration. So there's a lot of little helpers, and obviously you can go from making them yourself just out of little plastic or, you know, little plastic washers that you just dry erase, you know, right on to, you know, nicer ones that you get that are pre-made for you. So I definitely recommend both those things just in keeping track. And then kind of like Ben, if you know you're going to run a complicated combat, make yourself a cheat sheet. Actions are easy because you're always going to look at the actions for a monster or a mob or something like that to do them. Bonus actions, reactions, legendary actions, those are the harder ones to remember as you're going through. Mm-hmm. Make yourself a cheat sheet of the bonus actions, reactions, and legendary actions. Just of the characters. Keep it in front of you, right next to the computer, taped up to your, or pinned up to your DM screen, somewhere where it's easily in view, so you can do quick glances without having to jump between stat blocks. Because more than likely, most creatures won't have more than one or two bonus actions or one or two reactions. So we're talking probably for most combats, half a sheet at most, right? Mm-hmm. Of these things. But that is just really easy to have up so that you can remember to do your cool stuff. You can remember to do the reactions. If it's a spellcaster, again, have those reaction and bonus action spells easily applicable, because the action stuff, you're always going to look at the thing. It's the off turn. Highlight them in yellow. Highlight them in red. Pick a color, right? Green is your reactions. Yellow is your bonus action. Or, you know, whatever system you want to do. But that way they stand out on that piece of paper that's close to you so that you can see it whenever and don't miss your guys doing your cool stuff.
Yeah. And you know, so
that's one of the biggest things.
I'm just going to tack onto that resistances as well, or like immunities as well. Those basically the CR for a monster is mixed. It's not only just like, you know, AC and hit points. It has to do with resistances. It has to do with, you know, the types of abilities it has and things like that. I am horrible about remembering resistances. I'm also very horrible about remembering things like, you know, different types of movements, you know, if it can move fast or slow, if it has like a tremor sense or a blind sense or something like that. So anything that is just kind of like, you know, really weird and out of the ordinary, you know, add that to that highlight, you know, make sure that you really have an idea of kind of what's going on with it and what's known with it. Kind of going back a little bit to the board that you were talking about, make sure that the players themselves are responsible for their, any status effect, any, advantage or disadvantage that they impose or something like that. Have them remember to call it out so that it's remembered. That way it takes something off of your plate and they're responsible for the actions that they make. It's the best way that you can, you know, work with it that way. You know, nobody is to blame except for the person who should be tracking it, which is the person who made that effect happen. And then one other thing too, when logging HP changes, like if you're not using, you know, like a Roll 20 or D&D Beyond or something like that, where you can, you know, like type in like 15, then click the damage button, then it automatically subtracts the damage. One thing that I found a lot easier to do is just, like write the monster's name on a paper in front of you and then write down how much damage it takes and then add the next bit of damage, then add the next bit of damage over that. For some reason, addition is way easier in my mind than subtraction, like on the fly.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. And you just, you know, once you break that damage threshold that, you know, it has, or, you know, it's a good time for it to die. That's when the monster dies, you know, as opposed to just really trying to quickly do, you know, subtraction in your head all the time. It's, you know, just one of those little things that, you know, kind of helps keep things go faster, helps keep things go faster. That's great grammar too. Yep. So that, you can, you know, have the flow of combat going on, you know, what's going on. And it's a lot easier to be all like, oh, well, he's taking 25 damage. He takes another 47. I know that's not enough to get to 100 yet, as opposed to, okay, I have to subtract this much. And then there's this much left, I think. Let's see, carry the one. And yeah, it's just, in my mind, goes faster. Of course, there are going to be people out there who subtract way faster than they do with, you know, add. But for me, it's just one way to just keep things flowing. It's one less thing to worry too much about. And, or, you know, be one of those DMs that, you know, just kind of feels okay. It's had enough damage. The downside to that is that you can't really reliably use bloody, which is definitely come back as a cool conditional thing where abilities and stuff are kind of, you know, tied to it. So, you know, make sure you look at the abilities that your characters or your player characters have, as well as your monsters have, to see if that's something you need to actually, you know, really focus on, or if you can just play loosey goosey.
Yeah. Great ideas. There's a lot of ways you can do things to speed things up. I was just looking, slightly distracted. I was looking through our Discord. Someone had suggested as well, which I think is really good, get just a cheapy little laser pointer, red dot one. Because then it makes it really easy, especially if you're standing up, to just say, move this guy, point at laser pointer, to this spot, point with laser pointer. For your players to easily move exactly where you're wanting versus say, you know, move them at 35. No, not that square. No, the one to the left. No, one back. There you go.
Yeah.
When you can just be like, that guy goes there. So, those little red dot laser pointers, super, super cheap, super, super cheap. You can get them for like $5 at many, many places. You can probably, I'm sure you could find them at like Dollar Tree or Family Dollar at this point. So, very cheap, very useful tool for that, getting a little more precision if you're having other people move your minis too.
If your players are literally cats, though, you might have a problem. The end.
You're right.
Anyways.
Or if you have cats that are hanging around anywhere near your board, you might have a final boss fight coming in real quick.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, last but not least, for me at least, anyways, for like effects and things like that, especially ones that kind of stay, you know what, if you're able to, use a whiteboard. It doesn't have to be super, you know, special fancy 3D terrain or anything.
Yeah, not at all.
You can use a whiteboard. Just draw a circle. Hey, this is where the arms of Hadar or whatever, you know, is up. So anyone in there, that's where that's happening. If you have access to a 3D printer, you can always make, you know, like templates for this is the size of this spell. This is the size of this spell. You can have that. I know that there are some official like templates of rings and different things that you can get as well. I have some, which are, I mean, they look really nice, but you know, I don't play in person on that much anymore, so I don't get a lot of use. You know, things like that, or just like a plastic circle with like different cones on it so that you can see different lengths and stuff like that. That helps to really very quickly figure out, okay, this person is in this fireball, or this person is in this dragon's cone attack, or, you know, breath weapon, you know, something like that. Again, just makes things a lot easier to kind of just look at really quick, know who's in it. And then, you know, take the next steps and have them roll and see if they survive or how much damage you do or whatever.
Yeah, that's a great thing. I think we've talked about this a little bit before, but just straight up like roll out mat, dry erase allows you to do some like spell effect type stuff or keep track of things on the board itself, which can be extremely helpful. Some of the things I've shouted at before, like the Book of Battle Maps, or the Book of Battle Mats. There's several of those. Those are all really cool, very nice looking 2D maps that have all the terrain and stuff kind of built into them, but the dry erase as well, if you need to draw or add in anything, or anything like that. I've definitely used, just like they're playing, here's a big map of stone floor.
Yep.
And then I've dry erase drawn in, here's all the stuff, but it's a little cooler than just a straight up white one or straight up, you know, tan beige one, because it gives it a little more feel to where the location is. So there's a lot of that type of stuff that you can get very easily. There's also a few for, DMs who are traveling or going to other people's houses or your game store or something. There's several like roll up or fold up like thick cardboard ones that you can then unfold that are dry erase that travel really well. I have one of those that I bring around when I go places. To GM.
Yeah, I've got one too.
Very useful as well.
Yeah, double-sided. One side is like all stone, like, you know, dungeon floor. The other side is like foresty and stuff. So yeah, a lot of those out there. And then just kind of going back to spell templates, like you just get cardstock and cut out the shapes and stuff that you need to, you know, very cheap alternative.
A lot of it is very easy to make homemade. Because you have your measurement of, you know, an inch is 5 foot, an inch square is 5 feet. So it's very easy to then take that measurement and turn it into a cone or a circle or a cube, etc.
Yeah. And if you have a protractor, a compass, and a ruler, you are set. In fact, if you have a protractor, you have a ruler, so you're totally all set.
Yeah, lots of different ways. What about you guys? Do you have any other tips for this type of thing that we didn't mention? We'd love to hear. Shoot us a message on Blue Sky. Shoot us an email. Hop in the Discord and join in the conversation. We'd love to hear about it. But thank you so much for the question. It's a very good one, and one that I think all DMs and GMs can relate to at some level.
Yes, definitely.
All right. So moving on, we wanted to shout out a few quick things. First being, we love our Ginny D videos around here. And she has another really good one with Deborah Ann Wool, who we've talked about several times before, called How Deborah Ann Wool Makes D&D So Immersive. It's a very good video. It's only like, you know, 16 minutes or so. highly recommend that you check it out. Deborah Ann Woll is an incredibly good storyteller GM, and she really, all of her stuff I've watched, and I really loved her series Relics and Rarities on Geek and Sundry. And if you haven't watched that before, I highly recommend. She mixes, and it's something she's doing with Tales from Wood Creek as well, mixing like physical props and such with the game, just to make it more immersive. But that, it seems to be her real big brand of storytelling is immersion, right? So if you're looking for tips on how to make your sessions more immersive, it's a very good video to watch, and I would highly recommend it.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's one of those things where with a lot of actual plays out there, you have a lot of different examples of, you know, how you can DM, how you can involve your players, how you can do things. And if I had the ability and space and time, I would try to be Deborah Ann Woll as a DM, because she is absolutely amazing in all the creativity that she's able to pour into everything. And also how she just drives a story and, you know, makes things just feel like very relevant, very needed, very fast. And this, the way that she immerses her players is just, you know, just showcased very well in this video. Her speaking with Ginny D in about it is, you know, probably, I would say, one of the best videos that we've recommended so far on the show. Definitely one of the best.
Yeah, very good. And then speaking of Tales from Wood Creek, we mentioned that that was coming. It's here.
Yeah.
The first two chapters are actually out on YouTube right now from the Dungeon Dudes. They're really great, because I think there's going to be 8 episodes of this. They're only about an hour each. Very, very easily digestible. Not super long. We're not talking like a Critical Role 4 to 5 hour episode. These are very, very watchable in smaller periods, shorter periods of time. So it's really good. I need to watch the second episode, but it's incredibly cool the way it's like mixing D&D with like an escape room.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a little bit reality show, very different from most anything I've seen before. Highly recommend checking it out. The team over there has done an amazing job of bringing this together.
Yep. Definitely. If you watched Relics and Rarities before, this is a lot more of that and more so.
It's like the evolution of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's like the evolution of Relics and Rarities. But she did a fantastic job. So definitely check that one out. Also on the docket, we've got a few cool shout outs that you can go spend your hard earned dollars on if you so choose. Humble Bundle currently has a really cool Critical Role comic collection bundle, in a 3, 9, and 21 item bundle. And you can get all 21 of the Critical Role comics for, if you pay at least $18, mm-hmm. I've read several of them. They're actually very good. These are actual, you know, Dark Horse comics, written in collaboration with the folks from Critical Role. By the time this comes out, this episode, there will be about 4 days left to claim this, from the time this episode releases. So you still gotta, so you have a few days to go check it out, but the bundle supports the Critical Role Foundation, who work with a vast amount of charities to do a lot of good work. They helped with the California fires earlier on, and they do a lot of work with feeding those who need it as well. So anyways, if you like comics, this is an incredibly good deal, especially if you're a big Critical Role fan. This is a very, very good deal to be able to get all these comics. So definitely check that out.
Yeah.
Preferably in the next 4 days. Otherwise, yeah, it might be. Yes.
Please do. But yeah, I've read a lot of these stories, and I mean, they're a lot of fun. They take place before campaign one. So if there's, you know, some of the backstory that you've been really interested in finding out, like, why does Pike have white hair? Why is Grog familiar with a nymph for some reason? Like, you know, it answers questions like that and, you know, gives you a little bit of a peek into that. Plus, they also jumped in and started doing the Mighty Nein origins as well. So you've got a lot of that stuff in there. If Mighty Nein just happens to be your cup of tea instead. Or as well. Either or.
Yeah. Yeah. Get them all. Yeah. You can get them all if you want. Also, something near and dear to my heart. I've talked before about the Home of Mystical Tattoos. This is a series that has put out two books that are specifically focused on magical tattoos. I love the concept. I've been a big fan, especially ever since D&D integrated them as official. They have their own official magical tattoos. This takes that and dials it up to like 15. There's tons of them. The artwork in the first two books is just absolutely gorgeous because they have like the body outlines and then the actual drawing of what the tattoo looks like on the different parts of the body. It's super, super cool. They also have, I believe, two or three full classes they have made along with multiple subclasses with this, the surrounding the and using the tattoos and the mechanics they're in. Well, right now, they just a few days ago launched their Tome of Mystical Tattoos 3 book. So this is kind of the end of the trilogy, but they are pouring all their cool ideas into it. It's going to come with, you know, 100 plus more tattoos. It's going to have new subclasses for their brand new classes, the Tattooist and the Marked. So new subclasses for them. Shopkeepers, inks. Different types of inks that you can use for your tattoos. So very, very cool concept. If you use magical tattoos in your world or they're available to players, highly recommend. They have tons of tattoos all the way from, you know, common all the way to the legendary, the artifact level of tattoos that might cover your entire body, right? So really, really cool stuff. I love them. I've gotten the first two books and I've used several of them in my games before. So there's about, from the recording of this episode, there's about 22 days left to back this specific book. So highly recommend if that sounds like your cup of tea.
It is pretty cool. And the artwork is gorgeous.
It's gorgeous.
Yes.
Like their artists are incredible. Absolutely incredible.
Yep. There's so much support for this too. They're at about 10 times what their goal was. So, you know, it's good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And they still got a while to go. They've been unlocking several stretch goals. They're unlocked some new subclasses and stuff. They're actually even going to have some battle maps as well. Those are coming up too. So yeah, I'm very excited for this one to drop.
Nice.
All right. With that, that wraps up pretty much most of the main content from our episode. But of course, right before we go, we always talk a little bit about what we've been doing in our own games. So, Ben, have you played since we've last been together?
No. That's it. No.
It's just a shame.
It is. It's a very long break since the last time. We had a lot of real life stuff coming up from multiple people in our group. So
November, December.
Yep. Luckily, we're getting back together this Saturday and we're going to have a bit of a longer session. So I am looking forward to running it. And wow, I've had a lot of time to think about stuff and good. Plan things. So I'm looking forward to it. That's all I can say.
Excellent. Glad to hear it.
Yeah. How about you? You kind of left off on some pretty interesting stuff going on.
Yeah, some pretty heavy stuff. We did meet again. And we basically jumped right in to the aftermath of one of our players getting kidnapped, taken, essentially. And so we actually ended up playing out the escape of the rest of the characters from the facility they were in. And it was really interesting to see. I'm so dang proud of my players who just knocked it out of the park, like roleplay wise, trying to escape in the midst of their characters, just having so many emotions about what just happened.
Oh yeah.
And even in like the still life-threatening situation of trying to get away. So that was really cool. I ended up then doing a little vignette with the player who was captured. There wasn't any back and forth. It was just, you know, their character hanging in chains, seeing some of the captors talking and knowing that torture and interrogation were coming.
Ooh.
So really, yeah, rough, really rough stuff. We ended up on the way back, the characters just kind of finding their way, ended up running into another character who was beating up constabulary officers. And they ended up like picking her up and taking her back with them, which is the character that my player may or may not temporarily be playing for the time being, that we worked on creating and integrating into the world. The players did a really good job of kind of pulling the player in, but also being still emotionally distant because good. All the circumstances that have happened. Overall, I'm just so proud of my players. They did an amazing job. They played to their characters, but they did it in such a way that they could still pull the other player who lost their character in without it just being straight up acceptance.
Yeah.
And it was really the best way it could have played out. And I was really, really happy with that, but it did end on a downer. Like it's not a good situation for their friend, in a very bad place. The characters are mentally in a very bad place right now as well. And so it's going to be interesting to see what they do. If they try to find them, if they try to save them, it's hard to tell. It's hard to tell exactly what's going to happen. We have one more session for the year this Friday, because I usually take a few week break over the holidays, yeah. You know, into early January, just to kind of recharge my batteries and my, you know, creative juices. But I was like, we can't leave this. We can't leave it off here for like a month and a half or something. So we're going to have one more session. Then we will have our little break. And I may end up running a one shot just to do something else in December, for fun with the group. But one more of our main campaign for this year. And then we'll get back to that mid January. So I'm excited. It's sometimes sucky things happen and it can change how characters feel and act. And I'm excited really to see where it goes.
Yeah, no kidding. It is definitely one of those things where, you know, anytime that you have a mix up with the player characters, it is, you know, a challenge to bring them in the first place. So, you know, good job to your players for, you know, still being able to RP that whole thing, but accepting the, you know, the player in, knowing that, you know, you don't get to play with your friend if you don't accept them in some capacity at in the very
exactly.
least. But I mean, you know, big shakeups and stuff can happen, and you know, who knows what the future holds for everybody. It's a really interesting look on what's going on.
Yeah, it's definitely a situation that hasn't happened in any of my campaigns before, to this extent. So, and this level of danger. So yeah, I'm interested to see how it plays out.
Me too.
But that is to come. But until then, we will bid you all adieu for this episode. Of course, before we go, Ben, why don't you tell everyone where we can be reached?
Of course. If you want to tell us about some of your really cool tips and tricks, or, you know, share about your campaign or have questions overall, the best place to go is just to our Discord, which you can find a link on, or a link to, on dndiscussions.com. On our Discord, we have a great community, a lot of people there. You know, we share memes, talk about our games. You know, people have questions, ask for advice. It's a real great place to go. Definitely check it out. Look for that link on dndiscussions.com. But here's the cool thing. On dndiscussions.com, you can also find links to all of our Blue Sky accounts. So if you want to follow us there, that's a great place to find those links. It's on Blue Sky. We are at dndiscussions for the show. Ryan is at tbkzord, and I am at Ben Bumhofer. Now, if for some reason you don't want to, you know, talk to us or reach out in like a public forum or you know, any sort of way like that, you want to stay private, which is perfectly fine too. We have no problem with that. In fact, we have an email address specifically for that. So if you want to write us an email to dndiscussions@gmail.com, we are there to listen to you, answer questions, and, you know, possibly bring up, you know, any questions that you have on the show, with your permission, of course, so that we can, you know, kind of go over it and share your experiences or questions and, you know, help you as well as anybody else who's listening out. Aside from that, though, I am on an actual play podcast called Plus Five to Hit. That is going strong. We just had, I think, episode 10 release, and we recorded another one and lost a whole big chunk of the recording. So that's going to be a, hey, this also happened, and then we're going to pick up with the next episode, because, you know, you can't re-record the stuff that you did in the game.
No, that's just how that goes. That sucks. Yeah. That just sucks.
So it's a bummer that it happened, but we know for the future we need to actually have me do a backup recording just in case. So we're doing that. But check out Plus Five to Hit. It's where I play I have a lot of fun playing a barbarian. It's the first time I've really done a melee character overall. So I'm having fun. So check that out there. This show, though, DN Discussions, again, every single episode on dndiscussions.com, as well as your podcast player of choice. Check us out, listen to other episodes, share with your friends, leave us reviews, you know, all that fun stuff. But at this point, I do want to say thank you to everybody who has listened, who has supported. We love all of you. You are absolutely great. And, you know, we appreciate the support that you give, and especially the questions and the engagement and stuff that we get on Discord or, you know, Blue Sky or wherever. So thank you very much for that. Ryan, it is a pleasure talking to you. I'm very happy to hear
pleasure
about
as
your
always.
Your saga and your thoughts on things and stuff like that. And you know what? I hope you're able to stay well rested and stress free in this busy time of year.
You as well. You as well.
Thanks. It'll be a challenge.
Everybody else out there, you as well.
Yes. And with that being said, again, as always, be good to each other and roll high.
Take care, and we'll see you soon.